This is the Bruce Poinsett Show. I'm your host, Bruce Poinsett. And this bi-weekly news, interviews, and commentary experience comes to you along with my producer, Ado, in the background. Say what's up, Ado.
What's up?
Yeah, we do this news segment live on Twitch, so make sure you follow the numbers with a Z, FM, on Twitch. So that's, again, twitch.tv/thenumbersfm. So you make sure you don't miss a segment. And we also give you this full show every second and fourth Wednesday live at 7 p.m. on the Numbers FM. And you can catch clips on youtube.com/BrucePoinsett, as well as get access to exclusive bonus content on patreon.com/BrucePoinsett. So now, without all that housekeeping out of the way, we begin each show with the news stories you might have missed but should definitely be on your radar. First one we have comes from OPB. It's titled, Three Oregon Lawmakers Won't Run for Re-Election Citing Low Pay and Growing Job Demands by Lauren Drake. So, this article, basically earlier this week, Democratic lawmakers, Reps Karen Power, Rachel Prusak, and Anna Williams announced that they're going to be stepping down because, frankly, they can just no longer afford to be in office. Why is that? Let me go to the article. Drake writes, the legislature is technically a part-time job, paying a base salary of about $33,000. Lawmakers meet every February with sessions that cannot exceed 160 days in odd-numbered years and 35 days in even-numbered years. But special legislative sessions are becoming increasingly more regular, with lawmakers called back to Salem to tackle unfinished business at unexpected times. There are never-ending constituent demands, people desperate for help who expect unlimited access to lawmakers. And as the state grows, the budget and policy demands have also grown. Again from the article, the current base pay for Oregon lawmakers is around $33,000 a year, and the bill under consideration would have increased it to about $63,500 a year. Power, Prusak, and Williams addressed the issue in their joint resignation letter. We continue to perpetuate systems that leave Black, Indigenous, and Latinx and women legislators behind. Most people cannot afford to even consider this job. If this system is built for the financially well-off or the retired, will it ever work for you? What interest does this current structure serve? So again, this is something to keep on your radar. It's often not particularly popular for legislators to vote to raise their pay because, you know, the optics don't always look good. But again, if only people who can afford to be there because the pay doesn't matter, so wealthy white people, particularly white men, can only serve in these jobs, what are we going to get from our representatives in the legislature? Our next story comes from the Oregonian. It's titled, Portland Mayor Fires Former Police Union Head Over Retaliatory Leak Against Commissioner Joanne Hardesty. So some of you may have remembered, former police union chief Brian Hunziker actually leaked some information because Commissioner Joanne Hardesty was falsely identified as the assailant in a hit and run. And again, before, I guess, fact-checking that information more, Brian Hunziker decided to leak that to the press and essentially implicate Hardesty in the hit and run, which was later found to not be a part of it all. So, per the article, Ted Wheeler, who serves as the city's police commissioner, and Lovell outlined the termination in a February 28th letter to Hunziker, according to a copy obtained by the Oregonian/Oregon Live through public records request Tuesday. The letter, which was first reported by Willamette Week, shows that an internal affairs investigation launched after the leak occurred and found the 22-year veteran of the Bureau violated directives against disseminating confidential information and against retaliation. Quote, Officer Hunziker's actions harmed Commissioner Hardesty and harmed the community's trust in the police bureau. Wheeler said in a statement Tuesday, I support and have a great deal of respect for Chief Lovell and his work. We agreed on the gravity of these policy violations, but we disagreed on the level of discipline to oppose. Later on in the article, It says, Portland voters have made it clear that they support police officers being held to account for misconduct. Approving a ballot measure to increase independent oversight and accountability for officers with a resounding 82% yes vote in November 2020. So a lot of people have been looking at this and saying, why does this matter? This is the former police union chief. And what, you know, we're trying to hold people accountable, but what is actually going to change in the department? What's clear, though, is that the public supports more accountability. And despite what you may have heard in the State of the Union from President Biden this week that we must fund the police more, actually, there's a growing call for accountability, and there are growing incidents when, again, you have the union going out of its bounds to attack our city commissioners over minor attempts at accountability. It's clear we need not just reform, but really revolutionary change. The next story comes from Street Roots, and by Piper McDaniel, is titled Housing Advocates Fear Possible Eviction Wave. So per Daniels, evictions are on the rise in Oregon, and experts say vulnerable communities will be disproportionately impacted. Eviction filings have climbed in recent months, and researchers and housing advocates alike anticipate an even sharper rise in coming months. In January, there are 806 eviction filings in Oregon circuit courts, more than double the 306 filings in January 2021. The actual number of evictions is likely even higher because some evictions are filed in non-circuit courts, and some evictions aren't challenged in court at all. Now, with eviction rates already rising, another protection just ended: the grace period for renters with accrued back rent. The state's protection for renters enacted by Oregon Senate Bill 282 ended February 28th. With its end, tenants will be responsible for accumulated back rent. Later on in the article, Daniels writes, the most recent U.S. Census Pulse survey found an estimated 8.1% of adults in Oregon experienced food insecurity in the past week, meaning there were sometimes or often not enough to eat. And excuse me, I've been saying Daniels, I mean McDaniels. Also writes, census data collected between January 26th and February 7th also estimates another 107,000 adults, 4.8% of the population, are living in households that are not current on rent or mortgage payments and have slight or no confidence their household can pay on time next month. For 36.8% of those not current on housing-related bills, eviction or foreclosure could, in the next 2 months, is very likely or somewhat likely. So again, a looming story throughout this pandemic has been, what is going to happen with evictions? What's going to happen with foreclosures? A lot of people have been honestly teetering, you know, wondering, are they going to be plunged into homelessness and, you know, all the instabilities that may cause? And as of right now, a lot of us are still wondering, what's going to happen? Are we just going to, we're just going to cave in to the interests of, you know, powerful housing interests, I should say, at the expense of the people? Stay tuned. Our next story also comes from Oregon Live. It's Oregon wins $4.6 million federal grant to improve access to jobless aid for underserved communities. And it's written by Mike Rogaway. So Rogaway writes, the Oregon Employment Department said it will use the money to create a new business unit called Equitable Access to Unemployment Insurance. The department said it will write new materials in more languages, create outreach programs for underserved communities, and establish guidance to help people individually to seek unemployment aid. This, or he continues, Oregon says the new program is designed specifically to help Native Americans, Blacks, Latinos, Asian Americans, and Pacific Islanders, immigrants, people who don't speak English, people with disabilities, and impoverished Oregonians. The Employment Department will also use the federal money to analyze historical benefits payments to determine whether there are disparities in who receives this assistance. And this money is coming from the $1.9 trillion that was approved in COVID reliefs, that was approved by Congress for COVID relief a year ago. So again, this is something to keep your eye on. Their goal is to help underserved, underrepresented Oregonians But as we've seen with these programs, it can start there, but will that work in practice? Or will it go to white people who have, you know, white people who have partnered with underserved Oregonians? Stay tuned. Lastly, got an article from Willamette Week titled "The Neighborhood Watch App Next Door Grapples with a Vigilante Homicide." It's by Aaron Mesh. So as some of you, hopefully many of you, are aware, there, Justice for Patrick Kimmons recently held a protest in solidarity with Amir Locke, who was murdered in Minnesota by their police. And during that protest a couple weekends ago, a man in the neighborhood, Benjamin Smith, murdered June Knightley and shot and injured, I believe, five others, one who I think is permanently paralyzed. However, has that changed the sentiment around protests in Portland or Oregon? Well, conversations on the Nextdoor app, which is a lot like Neighborhood Watch social media, might say otherwise. So, per Mesh, "For months, a narrative has grown among Oregon conservatives that Portland is filthy and needs to be cleansed. That idea has also found purchase among neighborhood associations whose members on several occasions have threatened to take the law into their own hands. And it thrives on Nextdoor, the app that functions as a virtual neighborhood watch. By several accounts, similar obsessions drove Benjamin Smith, the man charged with murdering Knightley last week. So the actions of a lone gunman had a destabilizing effect. People on Nextdoor in the neighborhood where the killing happened struggled to fit the violence into their worldview." Mesh writes, "Two lengthy threads started on the Rose City Park page of Nextdoor, each drew dozens of comments. One focused on the shooting, the other on spray paint. The concern would eventually shift to a campsite growing nearby, first reported by KGW-TV. Willamette Week has selected some representative comments. In both cases, the original posters grew so frustrated by the discourse that they shut the thread down." So let's go to some of these so we can get an idea of what they were talking about. You know, "I know when I lost my brother to cancer," and was, this is by Mel L on that Nextdoor app. So I want to give Mel... I give Mel credit. "I know when I lost my brother to cancer and was going to his funeral memorial, the first thing that I did was buy 12 cans of spray paint so that I could tag up the church and funeral home in order to express my grief. Isn't that what is acceptable now? Destroy public property in order to mourn? My heart goes out to all the victims in this tragic incident. Destroying public property is not appropriate or acceptable. What if all the parents that have experienced school shootings all gathered with spray paint to destroy schools?" Or from Christina L., "I understand the flowers and chalk messages, such a tragic event. She deserves to be remembered, but you don't destroy property to remember someone. You can't just paint over it when it is brick and sandblasting will destroy the brick over a period of time. Maybe contact the city about something more permanent to remember all the victims of this mass shooting." And then from Shania R., I like this, "Nothing brings a community together more than complaining about their murdered neighbor's memorial." So, for those who haven't been on Nextdoor, it's what a lot of discussions are like, if not, as someone who grew up in Lake Oswego, you know, before Nextdoor was created, but has seen it since, it's also a good place for white communities to report whenever black people show up in their neighborhoods. So, you know, just a great space. In related, quote-unquote, vandalism news, well, actually, in related actual vandalism news, I should say, MLK Junior Elementary vandalized with hate speech graffiti, and this was reported by Gabby Urenda on Coin TV. So, for those who don't know, King Elementary this week was vandalized with swastikas and racial slurs. And as I'm sure you'll be surprised to find out, white people on Nextdoor aren't nearly as bothered. And this has been the news. The Bruce Poinsett Show will be back after this quick commercial break. The Bruce Poinsett Show is made possible by the support of members at patreon.com/brucepoinsett. Patreon is a service that allows you to directly support creators like myself through monthly or annual memberships. Become a member for as little as $3 a month and get access to exclusive bonus clips and live discussions. Check out this clip from the page.
Are you defending the prequels? Where does your defense end, Bruce?
So, you know what? Maybe this might surprise you, but yeah, the whole meal deal. I will defend the prequels, kind of. Again, I also had a disclaimer at the beginning that I would not put money on me if I were betting on this as a viewer, but will I defend the prequels? Yes. If you enjoy this content and believe in the community I'm trying to build, please support by becoming a member at patreon.com/BrucePoinsett. Welcome back to the Bruce Poinsett Show. This is our B block, and this is a segment that, you know, we talk about politics, but if anything gets the show taken off, it's going to be anything perceived as potential Blazer slander, so get ready. But yeah, we need to talk about the Moda Center. Hey, Ito, are you a big sports guy?
I like basketball quite a bit, but then beyond that, not really.
You've been following this stuff with the Lakers and the renaming of Staples Center?
Oh, no, I have not. What's happening there? What's happening?
Yeah, so they got bought by, they made a deal with Crypto.com, and they're going to become Crypto.com Arena.
Crypto, what? I'm curious, what was the process behind this? Why? What brought Crypto.com to buy the Staples Center and change the name to the Crypto.com Arena? Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't know the particulars other than, you know, apparently crypto is just, as a industry right now, is really making a push. Like, I went to a Blazer game last night and they kept talking about the, you know, so-and-so is brought to you by StormX, but they never say what, like, StormX actually is. And then I found out, I was like, oh yeah, it's a crypto company.
Oh, and wow.
Like, I guess this is just the thing, but yeah, I guess the biggest one is Crypto.com Arena. And what I thought was really funny about it is you've had these Laker fans come out talking about, it's always going to be the Staples Center to me. Just like, is that really the hill you want to die on, you know?
It seems not. They don't understand the economics behind basketball and how it functions.
Like, your loyalty is to Staples?
Yes.
Staples the company.
I never put that together. The Staples Center was the company's Staples.
Right.
Is Staples even open still?
You know, that's a good question. I have not. I'm trying to think of the last time I've been to a Staples.
I feel like I shop at Office Depot more if I need like school supplies or something of the sorts.
I could have fact checked this to see if Staples is still open. Either way, I feel like Staples would be all right.
Yeah.
But, you know, what it did also make me think of is, like, as goofy as it is for people to be like, it's always going to be the Staples Center, we've kind of had the similar thing here in Portland with Moda and, you know, the previously named Rose Garden. And it was always weird to me how people would be like, oh, it's always, like, I'll never call it Moda. It's the Rose Garden forever. And, you know, even on, like, a superficial level, it was weird. But then, like, I don't know. I've been in news, done a little history work, so I kind of like know sort of the background of just like the space and the Rose Quarter, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, like, are you familiar with the history of Memorial Coliseum?
I'm not.
Cool. So we're going to go down a quick trip down memory lane.
Please, please do. Let's hear it all.
Yeah. So the original home of the Blazers, the Memorial Coliseum, was built on top of a black neighborhood and the legendary, what was called Jumptown, which was basically like the jazz hub of Portland, black jazz hub of Portland. You'd have people like Duke Ellington and all these, you know, national stars come through. It was a pretty big deal. But, you know, in order to make way for Memorial Coliseum as well as I-5, Legacy Memorial Hospital, they gentrified the neighborhood, you know,
as it goes.
Exactly. But, and also fun fact, by naming it Memorial Coliseum or Veterans Memorial Coliseum, that made it a war memorial, which means you can't remove it. So, you know, fun pro tip for gentrification. if you make it a war memorial, it's almost untouchable. So same thing with like Veterans Memorial Highway and all these different things. But yeah. So when I think about the Rose Garden, that's basically like that came about in the 90s. And that was like, you know, the upgrade to the gentrification center, basically.
Right, right.
So, you know, as much as we'd like to have the nostalgia about it, it's weird when you actually think about it.
There's some weird history behind it, nonetheless. Yeah. Like, yeah.
And a lot of people, you know, obviously, again, they have this nostalgia. They have this personal connection to just, like, memories of Blazer games, the Rose Garden, and all of that. And to be clear, I'd argue I have more of a personal connection. Like, mm-hmm. my dad's a safety and loss control consultant, right? He actually worked on the Rose Garden when they were building it. You know, he tells me all the time about, you know, taking mom up in the catwalks and, you know, that scary experience. I don't know if it was just that memorable or my parents are, they're getting a little up there in age sometimes. And that was a cheap shot. Anyways.
It happens sometimes.
But, you know, like I said, I've got a connection. I get it. But still, what is the Rose Garden? It's the name Paul Allen gave a center.
Right.
Are we really that attached to, you know, hey, this is the billionaire's pet project.
Right.
Cool. And don't get me wrong. I love the Blazers. I'm not going to have anyone be out here talking about cancel the Blazers.
No diss on the Blazers.
Not at all. I love them. You love them. They may or may not be unintentionally tanking this year, but that doesn't matter. And that's another rant
that's
for another time.
That's a whole other conversation right there.
Stay tuned for the 6-3 Mafia report coming soon. Anyways, but what I'm saying is, do we really have to jump out of the window for the Rose Garden? Is that really the one?
Truthfully.
Like, I don't have any, you know, special attachment to MOTA. Like, if the Blazers, you know, something magical happens, the Blazers win a championship while it's the MOTA Center, and then, you know, the next process comes and StormX levels up and just calls it the StormX Arena, because just go ahead and put that here. You heard it first.
Right.
December 16th, 2021. Bruce Poinsett said that. Mark that.
Yep.
But when that happens, am I going to be like, no, it's MOTA for me? No, I don't care.
It's a title. We can't mess with billionaires' titling rights. They own the buildings at this point. We have no ownage of the staple or crypto or MOTA or Rose. They're just places where people are playing sports and have concerts.
Yeah, it's really just that. It's like, I think we can love sports. We can immerse ourselves in the game while keeping the bigger picture in perspective. Like, I know it's hard for people. I know, but we can do both.
Absolutely.
And, you know, in the meantime, though, just my only message, because I know this seems benign, but at the same time, I know there's a lot of Blazer fans who get real upset about
this. I know them very personally. I know.
So I'm just going to put it like this. Do you really want to be in the same boat as those people? Or let me be clear. Those Lakers fans.
Yes.
Do you hear me? I said those Lakers fans.
Those Lakers fans
who are out here talking about, it's always going to be the Staples Center for me.
Uh-huh.
Do you? I thought not.
Real quick, in support of those Lakers fans, the name, the crypto.com stadium center, pretty rough name. You could have just done crypto stadium, crypto center. You did not need to add the .com.
Apparently, I heard a rumor that they're going to try and nickname it the Crypt.
No, not the Crypt.
Again, strange things happen. I'm not saying you got to be like, MOTA, but remember, you could be the Crypt.
We could be crypto.com arena. We really could be crypto.com center. So, not, I'm with you. There's not... I can live with the MOTA. I can really live with the MOTA.
let me just say again, Blazer fans, let's enjoy the season. Let's get that high draft pick that we're clearly going for with the play on the court, because again, 6-3 Mafia Report coming another time. The Bruce Poinsett Show will be back after this quick ad break. BrucePoinsett.com is your one-stop shop for everything Bruce Poinsett. You have my services such as freelance writing and editing, creative nonfiction courses, as well as customized writing classes, event facilitation, and digital content creation. Again, go to BrucePoinsett.com for a quote and make sure to sign up for our newsletter so you don't miss any news or updates. And welcome back to the Bruce Poinsett Show. This is a segment, new segment, we're going to be calling More of This, Please. It's really straightforward. We highlight cool things happening in the community that we want to see more of, so we talk about them. And I got a number of special guests in the building today. Got Talilo, got Alex, Monica, Matt, Carlos, who've been part of this new narrative and Ascending Flow mural project. And we're going to just talk a little bit about art in the community, and well, using art to just support community and support youth specifically. So first off, I just want to kind of go around the room. I'm going to pull out the gallery view just for a second so you can, you know, see, got a little full building here. But anyways, we're going to go around the room. I'll just talk about your role on the project, and then kind of like what brought you to it in general. So we'll just start with Talilo.
Yeah, I'm Talilo, program manager of Ascending Flow, also a co-founder of Ascending Flow. I really believe that Ascending Flow was inspired by hip hop and its elements, and just my lived experience from being in Portland and being a former Tay youth and incarcerated youth. I really thought that art is really important element to be in that space, to just create an environment of creativity for the youth that come through our doors. And what better way than to reach out to those that are doing similar work in the community? So I put the call out and the community answered, and that's where we're at today.
Yeah. My name is Matt. I'm like a local muralist. I've been in town about, visual artist, I've been in town about 12 years. Good old Facebook, man. I think I met Talilo actually. There's another pro outside the frame where they give a houseless and kind of at-risk youth, kind of give them a spot to go make movies together and like write their own stories. And I met him briefly down there. I think he was helping with some editing, if my memory is correct. But about a year later, though, yeah, on the old Facebook, man, he put out a call, and my name showed up, and a bunch of other of our local mural painting friends. And I don't know, man. I feel like what they're doing over there is really good. You need to help people from the ground up, and I feel like Talilo has put a lot of good energy into that, and it was really empowering and inspiring to see all the people show up, like Alex and Yamio and Arise and Firecat. Just I don't know, so many blank walls, man. I think it's helpful for the psyche of the community, and also I don't know, just that mentorship is super important, man. I had a couple people in my life that put me on the right path. Like one of my art teachers got us scholarships to school, and I think he kept doing that for maybe 20 years. So feels good to give back a little bit.
And I love what you said there about blank walls. We're definitely going to circle back to that a little bit later.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Next, Monica.
Yes. For me, it was more just kind of wanting to get my feet wet. In reference to doing some more mural work and definitely working with the community directly, may it be volunteer work. I just felt like that was the right thing to do, especially with having a child that's at a very impressionable age as well. I kind of wanted him to get involved and kind of see like what other people were doing in the community to, you know, help the youth and support the arts and stuff like that. So that was really important to have him come down and work on the mural with me as well. But yeah, I was found on Facebook also, just as a referral. I've been doing more mural work probably in the last couple of years, but I'd say the last 8 years I've been just doing more canvas work. So I appreciate Lilo giving me the opportunity to be a part of his mission and, you know, create something for him for that space.
Sure, for sure. Up next, got Alex.
Hey, I'm Alex Chu, and I've been right now I'm a full-time mural artist. I also have two kids, so a lot of my life is balancing family and trying to get my art going. A lot of my murals have to do with representing people in the community and trying to tell other people's stories and highlighting stuff that I think is important to remember in areas. And I met Talilo through a project through a friend, Pamela Santos, and she said that he was had a community center that he was opening in Southeast Portland, and I was doing a mural in the neighborhood at the time on 122nd and Southeast Division, and part of it was also learning about my neighborhood and seeing who's doing good work. And I was really inspired by meeting Talilo and seeing his creative network and seeing the music that he makes. So it opened a window into a world. And I feel like I've established myself as an artist in different ways, but mural art is like a new thing. So it was amazing to have the opportunity to connect with other muralists on this project. Like I actually worked with Talilo twice, so like, well, I mean three times, like we've been collaborating a good amount. So I did something on the inside of the building and on the outside and got to connect with all the artists, and even Carlos here, I met him similarly. He does Morpheus Youth Project, and I was able to connect with him through some of my mural work. So it's great to, I feel like it's a privilege to be able to create artwork that represents people in the neighborhood. And I'm trying to just figure out how to be connective and make a real difference in the city with art and just as a human being. So that's where I'm at. And I'm glad to just connect with other people.
What's up? And last but certainly not least, Carlos.
Yeah, like Alex said, I run Morpheus Youth Project, and I've been knowing Talilo for a good while now. God, I can't even remember what year we met. Talilo's been a while now, but
2011.
Yeah, man, jeez, that's crazy.
It was actually through Outside the Frame. Outside
I
the
met frame. You at Kabu. I met you
at Kabu. Yeah.
But in some ways, Talilo and I have had a little bit of a parallel existence, you know? And so we've kind of like weaved in and out of each other's existence with the type of stuff that we do. Through hip hop and through our work with youth, you know, and he's always been somebody that I've been, you know, I just respect what he's doing, especially right now with what he's got going on. I feel like he's really got something good going, and I'm just really happy for what he's got going on. And I'm just glad to see somebody else doing it in a genuine way like that. And so he reached out and he wanted to do some youth engagement with the mural project. So I was able to meet up with a few of his, about three of the youth there and do some painting. My schedule tends to be all over the place cause I run workshops all over the place. I do stuff within, the system, you know, within the, juvenile prisons and juvenile jails. And I also do stuff out in the community. So I'm always out kind of running around. So my schedule was a little different, and unfortunately I didn't get to paint alongside of the other artists. I would have loved to have done that. That's always just such a cool vibe, you know, and it sounds like these, like the other artists that I didn't get a chance to meet, I did get a chance to meet Yamiao, painting in Vancouver, but some of the other artists I didn't get a chance to meet, and I wish I would have loved to. It's always a good vibe, and it sounds like they were, you know, they're real good folks. So, but I did get out there on different days, and we kind of painted a section that was kind of on the left side of where their work was. And so we were trying to come up with a concept that tied in to what they had going on. And we put something together. We had a lot of fun doing it. We had music going, and We had Doe Rock out there dancing while he was painting. Like, it was a good vibe. We had a lot of fun. And it was raining on us too, man. We had the canopies going and we didn't care. We didn't care. It was fun.
It was a gnarly day.
Yeah.
That makes it memorable, got it right?
Done. Got it done. Yeah.
So
I feel proud about
it. It looks really good. I was really impressed with the youth. Like, just, man, I can't control them.
It was fun. We did a little bit of a kind of a workshop type of thing. So what I usually do with that is I'll bring out some panels and I'll just kind of teach them a few little techniques. And what I was trying to focus on, like, we were developing ideas for what we wanted to do on our section of the wall. And while we were doing that, I was trying to focus in on, as they were coming up with ideas with what they wanted to do, I was trying to think about what types of techniques they were going to need to be able to pull that off. So I would teach them, you know, different ways to kind of play with the gradients and kind of how to carve angles with the cans and just how to get certain details, cutbacks and stuff like that I thought would be useful for what they were doing. And they came through. It was cool. We had a lot of fun all the way through. It was a good experience. I'm glad I did it.
Yeah, y'all did a great job over there.
So, Talilo, could you talk a little bit more just about that the concept of this and specifically the focus on youth in foster care and youth aging out of foster care?
Yeah. Before that, I just wanted to say real quick, Monica, she was the first muralist in our walls in the basement. She did the water element, and the water element and ascending flow stands for community and mentorship. So I think it was a really important start off to the murals that followed in the space. Can you repeat your question again? Sorry, I just want to say that before I forgot about it.
Oh yeah, no problem. You just talk about the concept around youth in foster care and youth aging out of foster care.
Yeah. So youth in foster care, it's a demographic that is really not focused on as much. Actually, our program is the first in its nation. Usually they'll put a lot of foster care youth in hotels or have them in residential programs. And because they're property of the state is what they say, it limits the things they can do. And even for like foster parents, it limits what certain kids can do. So it's like, it's really difficult. So in our program, we have that freedom to engage them and meet them where they're at. Since they're 18, they're in an independent living program. And we really believe that, you know, mental wellness is really important. Emotional wellness is really important. And creativity is a way to express those emotions and feelings. And it's not just that. Like, you can have the creativity and all that stuff, but it's who's connecting with them, which is the most important thing. It's that connection piece. Are the people that are connecting with them have the lived experience? Can they look at them and see them as humans and understand what it's like? And if not, if they don't understand what it's like to be in foster care, do they understand what it's like to be in some sort of system or have that lived experience? I think that's a really important element of connecting with the next generation of youth is just getting it, you know? Developing the space and having those outlets is really important after that connection piece happens. And sometimes, creating songs with an individual or doing a workshop and learning spray painting techniques or learning how to box or anything like that is a good way to develop that connection as well. So it kind of all goes hand in hand, similar to hip hop and its elements too. Like, you know, I know a lot of hip hop heads that do a lot of things. They don't just rap, they do everything. Like, we was just busting flows while we were painting the mural, you know what I mean? So
Well, that's what this is. Like, hip hop in its true form is it's about it's a social movement, you know.
Yeah.
And I think like that's what I appreciated about what Talilo's doing is he's taking it back to those original the original concept of what hip hop was created for in the beginning, you know. So he's using it in the same way that it was used when it was in the South Bronx.
I 100%, man. I think creativity is one of those things that can really save people too. Yeah. Something that I'm sure a lot of us at darker times have turned to something, tried to take that and turn it into something positive. And I just know that age group, even if you have a lot of support in your life, like it's hard anyway. And then you're really impressionable too. And like, but you're also like, I don't know, you're like a grown adult too. So I think any mentorship out there is very much needed. I think there's a lot of people.
It's a weird gray area, like 18 to 25, yeah. That transitional stage is a weird gray area for some folks, especially foster youth, because the reality is a lot of foster youth, they get out of the system and they get pimped out. They get taken advantage of. They start joining gangs because they don't, you know what I mean? How are you going to survive? Now you went outside in, you around other folks that are struggling in the same way. And now you're clicking up, you're out there, you know what I mean? So, and next thing you know, you're in incarceration, meeting Carlos in a program, you know what I mean? So it's like, it all intersects. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the importance of, and it's not just hip hop, the elements of hip hop is important, right? Like we can have a youth that comes in and they're just into metal or rock. But the most important thing is that someone's connecting
with whatever it may be.
That we're looking at, do they have housing? Are they eating healthy? What are their goals? If they don't have goals, can someone, you know, help them navigate what they're interested in to help them figure that out, or be like a mirror for them to kind of like be like, yo, this is what I've been through. And, you know, you don't have to go down that path. Or I wonder what it would look like to think about this in a different way. And then, you know, have those conversations where you kind of support them having figuring out for themselves, because that's the most important thing. I feel like a lot of kids in the system get told what to do a lot. And that type of approach doesn't work, you know, kind of just showing.
I don't think it works for anybody.
That's why that side-by-side mentorship is really effective, you know, doing stuff with the youth. You know what I mean? It's not just like come in and, hey, this is how you should live your life, you know, and trying to kind of talk at the youth, or even just like the conversations that Talilo and I have with the kids that we work with happen as we're doing something with them, you know, as we're bonding with them, as we're connecting with them. And I think that's why it's so effective. I mean, it's a different type of an approach, but I think it's an approach that needs to happen more often. There's a lot of folks that are out there that have so-called, you know, outreach and mentorship programs, but they're not doing anything that can really engage the youth. You know, they might be taking them out to
McDonald's,
maybe the movies and stuff like that, but it's not, there's nothing there that has any depth, you know?
Every time I look at a program, I'm like, what are your outcomes? How successful is it based on the use and how they define it, you know?
Yeah.
That it's youth-centric, and then you see youth that come out with all these barriers, and next thing you know, they got a job, like, getting a job or even like getting their GED. Like a lot of people they celebrate people graduating from college, but what about like a kid just entering college? Like that's a huge accomplishment right there. Victories are big for youth that have a lot of barriers.
Well, and the thing too, speaking of barriers, you know, when you're talking about foster youth, you know, in the line of work that Talilo and I have been doing, you know, I mean, and I work with youth that are incarcerated, and the ones that seem to have the most difficult challenges and the most, you know, like they got barriers right from the get-go. You know what I mean? Like they're born into these struggles, you know, and they tend to have the most difficult challenges that they face, you know, and they tend to be the ones that are the forgotten and thrown away kids, because nobody knows what to do with these kids. You add, you know, mental health related challenges, and there's a lot of LGBTQ that are coming from that that arena that folks, they don't understand it, and so they're just like kind of push them off, you know. And I feel like those are the ones that need the most,
you know? Yeah,
and just like most cultures too, like you start looking at Black culture and Filipino and immigrants that come to America, like I feel like those that are handed the most, like have the most barriers, if they're like helped to navigate, to rise above it, they become like the most productive members of society. Yeah. They have so much to add, you know what I mean?
Strongest, yeah.
They're the strongest, and they Like, I feel like if once I get older and I want to pass this off to somebody else, I want to pass it off to people that have been through these types of programs or have come from similar environments because of that lived experience and that perspective, you know. Yeah. They'll be able to connect with the next a little better.
And so, yeah, this is, you guys are dropping a lot of gems here, but we could probably talk about that part just for like another hour, but I do want to be respectful of your time. So, Matt, you brought up a point earlier about just all this blank space, and it really resonates with me just because, I was telling you offline, growing up in Lake Oswego, where there's a lot of both stuff on the books as far as like public, basically discouraging public art in terms of laws, but then also just socially, all this rhetoric around property values and all this stuff. But personally, I believe, murals, public art projects add vibrancy, not to mention, when you talk about just like your all's experience 100%. Out there, just being together in that process, working both, as artists, working with young people, like there's just so many opportunities in this. So can y'all just talk about, I guess, and this is open to anyone, as far as one, just the value again of, public art projects, mural projects specifically. And what do you think, that these types of opportunities just add to the community in general?
I guess if no one else wants to jump in, I think there's like a balance between why people do things creatively anyway. I think it's a form of human expression. And then we have to, as people in society, find a way to either make a living at that or just do it regardless. And like, I think as artists and musicians, there's a lot of things that we just think this is for the right reasons. This isn't for money. This is for, and unfortunately, a lot of the things with, you're talking about property owners and like places like Lake Oswego, like even dealing with like big, like getting rack money or grant money. There's just a level of like what the people that own the buildings think they want their building, it affects their value. And I think one thing that's good that's come out of the pandemic is you've seen a lot of artists, a lot of musicians not knowing what to do, having their wings clipped, but also kind of, going to be the muses for society, going and putting some bright colors, like even, Talilo said, like to hop back to the facility we just painted, like the outside of the building is covered in bars, and we spend months of gray here, and like that has a mental effect on people. So I feel like sometimes you'll paint a thing, and I feel like a lot of graffiti writers or street artists understand this because they're not making money going out and putting their little wheat paste up or painting a piece under a bridge. And there's definitely an element for the love. And I think that even goes back to what they were talking about with hip hop. But I think it's better for the whole community. You see like Brazil, you see it worldwide, like the favelas down in Brazil, they're just like, these kind of shanty things just covered in beautiful artwork. And like, that's the voice of the culture I see right there.
That's what I said. I tell people like, it's honestly like driving through some of these places, it's like Get Out, like it's sterile and creepy.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Yeah. It feels like a hospital or a prison cell or amazing what a little color can do, right?
I did want to bring up, I live in the neighborhood, so like I'm like walking distance from the center, and there's not a lot out there. It is like 122nd Division. Like the only art out there previously probably was like the window paintings for like the butcher shop or something like that.
Yeah, right? Extremo.
So I feel like to be able to drive by there and then just to like round that, like go down 122nd and just see that color come out just makes a huge difference. And then I think that the community is going to be inspired by that. And especially the young kids, like when we're out there, people are like talking to us and having conversations and really like encouraging what was happening. So it's a good feeling to change the environment and then feel like I think other people are like, oh, like that happens in the neighborhood now. That's like a possibility. And I think that that's encouraging and inspiring to young people too. And the people in the program.
Yeah. Well, that's a
It's a beautiful sentiment. And yeah, if, you know, if no one else has anything else to add, I just want to, you know, again, thank you all for taking the time this morning. I know we've gone a little bit over, but like I said, I really appreciate one, the work you're all doing, and then just, you know, taking the time to kind of talk about this project. And Alex, that last point you made about just showing people the possibilities of what can be done out here, mm-hmm. we, you know, just put some intentionality behind it, and we, you know, get the right people, you know, get good people just working on these projects. So
thank you for putting this together, Bruce. I got to get going. Thanks, Monica, Matt, Alex. I love all of y'all. Thank you for supporting. Yeah. We are on track. The Flow is on track to expand too. And I'm looking at new buildings and stuff. So there's opportunities for more walls.
Let's paint some stuff.
Hoping these buildings get a lot bigger so we're not in a basement.
Yeah.
Because that basement isn't ADA accessible either. So that's like another thing I got to figure out. But would love to have a space more accessible to the public and serve the public, not just the foster youth coming out of the system.
Love to help, man. Thank you, y'all.
Yeah, thank you all again, and enjoy the rest of your day. Keep up the good work.
This has been the Bruce Poinsett Show. Make sure to catch us every second and fourth Wednesday at 7 p.m. on the Numbers FM, as well as on youtube.com/Bruce Poinsett. And for exclusive clips, go to patreon.com/Bruce Poinsett and become a member. In the meantime, hey, Black people, trust me, it won't hurt. See you next week.